Let's just start first on a light note. Today
April
is
Fool's.
April 1st. And so I started looking around, doing my deep dive into the internet. But I was surprised.
That's always dangerous.
Yeah, it is dangerous. My admittedly cursory research, there is no definitive origin story to April 1st. But playing pranks on April 1st is almost universal now, and with some reports going back centuries. So
yes.
Would you like me to tell you a little bit more?
Please.
I've really enticed you. In France, for example, a poem from 1508 refers to Poisson d'Avril, April fish, evidently referring to a gullible person, one easily fooled, like a fish in the warm mm-hmm. waters of April, easier to catch. But there's nothing linking it specifically to April 1st. In 1686, a Flemish poet, Edouard de Denay, referred to it in a prank he played on his hapless servant, sending him all over town. And the first British reference was in 1686. 13 years later, we know of a good British prank, and that is tickets were distributed to anyone who was interested in watching lions being washed at the Tower of London. There were no lions, but there was quite an audience.
I was going to say, there was no TV, no internet, so washing lions was
washing lions, the annual washing lions ceremony.
Big entertainment there.
Yeah, but you have to watch. Journalists have been gullible themselves. So there's linking.
I have a story about that when you're done.
Oh, do you? Okay, because the Associated Press in 1983, is that the one?
Nope.
We've got more stories. Oh, a personal one, even better to end on. They republished a report that the holiday began back in ancient Rome under Emperor Constantine, who let one of his jesters play king for a day on April 1st and thus created the holiday. But it turns out that this itself was April Fool's joke, fabricated by a Boston University professor on a gullible Associated Press reporter. Anyway, what's your story?
My story is when I was working in newspapers, one of the most aggravating things in the world were radio news people who would get the morning newspaper, read our stories that we had worked to produce, and then read them on the air as if they were their own. And so one April Fool's Day at a different newspaper in a different town, we planted a ridiculous story. I won't say what it is. And sure enough, this gullible idiot reading the radio news went through this ridiculous story. I think we were selling the hospital or something that really would have, I mean, any reporter would have looked into that to make sure it was true.
All it would have taken is a phone call,
exactly.
Even back in the pre-internet
exactly.
days. Yeah.
And so we caused a little ruckus at the radio station.
And a few chuckles.
Yeah, and a few chuckles. It cost us a little bit of money, you know, but the printer, everybody was in on it, the publisher, the printers, the guys in the press room, and so.
Did it teach a lesson to the radio folks? Did they back off at all?
No. From their shoes, I get it. I mean, they weren't getting paid anything either, you know, and so.
Yeah.
But they could have given us credit. That's all I want.
Yes. In this morning's newspaper, be sure to read.
Exactly. That's all.
That's.
But yes, April, you got to be aware. On
you
April
do.
1st, you just, you know. I don't think it's as big a thing as it used to be.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah, I remember as a kid you had to be really careful on April Fool's Day.
Well, wasn't War of the Worlds, the whole Orson Welles thing, wasn't that on April 1st?
Yes, that was a classic.
Yeah, that was a classic.
Yeah, the aliens are invading the planet Earth. And that was a radio show, and people were so convinced. There were people that were really terrified.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It really worked.
To the point where it really caused, you know, can we ever do this kind of, should we have done it?
That's right. It did cause some, some angst on the producers thinking, you know.
It was a little bit too good.
Sometimes
that happens.
Yes. And then sometimes it's always awkward when you get out of the, how do you end a prank? I had a couple of those when I was a young worker and playing on coworkers. Then at a certain point, this guy has bought this, you know, that we're all going to be fired. We're a coworker. When do we stop and say April Fools?
Yes.
So they can be cruel.
Right. And I think it was interesting that one of your examples was a nobleman sending his servants all around town for no reason. You know.
Yeah.
Because he could.
Yeah. That's right. And the servant didn't dare.
Yeah.
So the servant wasn't really a fool. The servant did what the Lord ordered him to do.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so, but the No Kings protest this past week, and now that wasn't a joke. That was really something. Did you read about that?
Well, I read about it and attended it.
Yeah, I attended it to 8 million people or so nationwide and, of course, globally. If my calculations are right, what, that's 1 in 50? 500?
Yeah, you're asking me to do math in the morning.
I have to do, sorry, I haven't finished my coffee. But it was really a big turnout and very lively. And while it wasn't April Fool's, there were signs and costumes that were really funny. I was refreshing my memory as I was going through the web last night, as long as I was there for April Fool's Day. One of them I liked was geezers against Caesars.
That's not bad.
Eggs are expensive because all the chickens are in Congress.
Yeah, that's true.
IKEA makes better has better cabinets. And don't make me repeat myself, history.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit cruel. But my favorite one is, our best hope is that he takes medical advice from RFK.
Oh, that is a good one. I didn't write down the ones when I was at the rally because I was wandering around looking, and I should have been taking photographs of signs, but I didn't this time. But I think we have some very clever people in our town.
So the question is, does that translate in November?
That's a very good question. The energy here.
Exactly.
And that was the largest turnout at an American gathering since 1970 for the First Earth Day. I guess the very first No Kings last June was, a couple million, and then in October it was 7 million, and then this time 8 million. I also noticed younger people attending because I think probably the war efforts have motivated people and got them out. And if you're going to go out and march, surely we'll go and vote. But let's see if that energy can translate to bringing others to the polls.
Yeah.
That's really what will make
a
difference.
And I would like to say, surely you'll go and vote, but I've just seen too often.
I know. It's true.
You know, the people are all fired up now, and then November comes along, and I don't think this is going to happen. I can't imagine the president and the current administration reversing course and suddenly being reasonable and compromising and doing all the things that they would need to do to win back the support of the public.
And so that's why he's doing things like yesterday signing an executive order to get all of the names of Americans. All of American voters have to be on this federal government database, and he's going to have post office with ensuring. I mean,
which is crazy.
It is so patently illegal. And of course, there's all sorts of challenges to it already today. But it's these desperate efforts.
Well,
desperate efforts
to cling on to power. He is going to be attending the Supreme Court hearings today on birthright citizenship.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well,
I have a little bit.
I assume the thinking is that I'll sit there and glower at them, and that will intimidate them and force them. But at any rate, the oral arguments are going to be heard today in his attempt to turn back. There just is no ambiguity at all in what is. You could talk about that better than I can.
No, and in fact, I think he's going to glower. I think you're right. Like a mob boss or something.
Or fall asleep.
I know, one of the two.
The other, both.
Or both.
It's going to be a long day. He'll probably get
fall
in a
asleep
little bit
with
of both.
He'll have to fight himself not to start shouting, and that won't
Exactly.
So this landmark case, potentially landmark case.
Or reacting at all. I mean, I don't think he'll shout, but I could see him groaning.
Oh, yeah.
And sighing. And
his eyes. Oh,
well,
yeah.
No, but it's doing things that will be loud enough. I could see him doing something loud enough to be picked up on the audio in the courtroom. I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
I mean,
but that will backfire among
like a normal person. That's
That'll backfire among at least 7 of the justices. There's 2 that probably won't.
That's right.
Mind at all thinking anything that he does. So to recap on this, on his first day in office, Trump again wielded his executive order pen and stripped citizenship for children who are born in the USA unless at least one parent is a citizen or permanent legal resident.
Right.
And To me and to lower court judges so far, it violates a number of things. 14th Amendment, enacted after the American Civil War because of to clarify that the to overturn Plessy versus Ferguson, I mean a Dred Scott decision where the Supreme Court said that black Americans would never be citizens, said that states that people born in the U.S. and, quote, subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens. The Trump DOJ presents a very narrow interpretation.
I guess
of,
so where is the ambiguity? That's
I
what
know.
It says.
No, they're fighting over the word jurisdiction. And the Supreme Court case from 1898 clarified that.
Yeah.
But the jurisdiction, they said it means someone who has allegiance to the U.S. already, which children wouldn't, of course, but their undocumented parents wouldn't yet have allegiance, or undocumented or temporary parents would not have that allegiance to the country. Now, that was the same argument that the government raised in an 1898 case, Wong Kim Ark. He had been born in the United States. He was born in San Francisco, went back to China, came back through, and the port authorities wouldn't let him in because they denied he could be a citizen. Of course, this was at a time of a lot of heightened racism against Chinese Americans. Mm-hmm. It was, and especially on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. So they brought this as a legal case, and he was able to win with a 6-2 vote that no, when it says born in the United States, that's all it means. 1940, the Congress passed a law with almost identical language as the 14th Amendment, codified it in 1952. And so what we're thinking, looking at this from a legal perspective, is that if they don't want to wrestle with big constitutional questions because the Supreme Court will try to judge it on the most narrow grounds possible, is that they will find that it violates the statute, the 1940 law, because rather than reach into the Supreme – reach back to the 14th Amendment, to me it's really blatant. It really is obvious. The problem is Congress could then – president then could demand Congress rescind the 1940 law. Now, he can't – it probably wouldn't go anywhere in the short term, but because his voting bill that he's been trying to push hasn't been going very far either. But anything like that is – I think a really – it needs to be really clear. It's time for the Supreme Court to be unequivocal that you cannot – and it, that you cannot change something like this. A president has no authority to do this by himself, and he certainly can't, and Congress hasn't acted on this question.
And I was going to say, I think it is fair for Congress to take a look at it. I think it's fair to say that the 14th Amendment was passed at a time when we didn't envision the type of travel and ability of mobility that people have now.
Mm-hmm.
And anchor babies wasn't a notion at the time that that was passed. And maybe we should take a second look at it.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
But that would be Congress.
That would be Congress.
With hearings.
Yes, yes. And all the mess and all the fuss.
And all the transparency.
All I'm saying is if they were to do that,
yes.
I think that would be worth
it. Statutory is the way to go. But
this,
it's like Trump seems to think he has a magic pen. And whatever he writes with that,
well,
including on our currency.
I will note that he spent 10 minutes during a cabinet meeting talking about his magic pen.
Yes, he did.
He loves his Sharpie.
He did.
He loves his ballroom and he loves his Sharpie.
Well, and speaking of the ballroom, that's been on hold.
Speaking of the ballroom. It is. Well, we'll see.
Yep. I really don't know what all this is going on. But there. I do think this is a very important day. And the Supreme Court even accepted this case is a little troubling because ordinarily if they agree with lower court judges, they just let it stand. But that means at least four members of the court wanted to hear the arguments. So that's why we're going to go ahead and have it. So be watching the news tonight. The other thing I'd like to talk on is a little bit about this notion that the polling data and the protests are not going to translate to a win. And that's many of the media observers are saying it's because there's no one unifying theme. And so the Democrats don't have anything to really rally around. But I disagree with him because I see there is a unifying theme through the No Kings protests other than just dislike and profound distrust of this administration. It's lawlessness, greed, and cruelty. The protesters want to see constitutional and legal processes restored. That's what they want to see. Historic norms, rules reestablished, limits on power and greed enforced, and rights respected. Not so long ago, that was not radical. That was so expected,
right.
We didn't even talk about it. So I do think that's going to be a winning issue for the Democrats, not just in the midterms, if they stay focused on we just need to return to normalcy, but also in 2028 when Trump isn't on the ballot, because you can't run anti-Trump campaign if he's not running. So,
well, and I will say this, Peter and I have had kind of this running going back and forth where he's paying a lot of attention to these, you know, special election, off-year special elections. And I keep saying, yeah, it's a state legislature. Who cares about the state legislature in Arkansas? I think it's 40-0 now. Something
and
like that.
And in Mar-a-Lago, in and Trump's in backyard.
Yes, but yes. I think 40 is correct. I'm certain
I think
that
you're right.
Zero
it's,
is
I, yeah, it seems that seems credible.
Republicans have not won.
Well, and what they have no program other than, I mean, we might be anti-Trump, but they are
right.
Totally 100% behind everything the administration does. Therefore, they're not coming up with their own policy proposals and wins.
Right.
In fact, Congress hasn't really done anything.
No. Well, to the point where we see right now, they can't. The Senate Republicans and Republicans in the House and the Senate can't agree on what
yes.
they want to do. And so they just go home.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the thinking is, well, we got the TSA fix, so the pain point at the airport will go away. So if the Coast Guard and FEMA and all of these other people don't get paid, yeah, the public won't notice. It won't.
Yeah.
It won't impact us.
It won't be, and that way they can go on their holidays and not worry about TSA. I know that there's some internet media sleuths out there tracking, posting photographs of Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz and others slinking out on holiday while everybody else is waiting to get paid.
And I wrote a column last week or 2 weeks ago saying that the Democrats should end the shutdown because, I mean, the Democrats are the one trying to force change through the shutdown.
Except, no, they're not. They're just trying to get ICE to comply with federal law for every other federal legal official. That's all.
I understand that, but that's trying to force change from what is happening now.
Because what is happening now is so bizarre.
Yeah. Well, but the point I was going to make, so even though the Democrats, in my opinion, started this, once it got to the point where the Republicans in the Senate say, okay, we'll fix it, we'll go along with vote unanimously, send it over to the House, let's just get it done, and the House won't hear it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. That's the Republicans saying, what, they're blaming Democrats for this? No, you need to blame us. We're responsible.
You're right about that, holding up big signs pointing to themselves, yeah. And there were there was some earlier negotiations where that the president put the kibosh on, and so this is all just very, very strange. So, but we do have some polling data that is not good for Republicans, and especially not good for Donald Trump. He is way below water where he was even in his first term in office at this point. Every other previous president has been above this point. I mean, they've been low in some cases, including Joe Biden, but not this low. So yeah. We now have new lows in polling data. So, of course, Trump and what I thought was compelling is not only are his polling numbers low, but Nate Silver, who sort of does he reviews and assesses multiple polls, and he tries to take it into his account, you know, the reliability of the polls, mm-hmm. the questions asked, et cetera. But Trump's the enthusiasm voters feel is also very low. So only 22% of Americans say they have a strongly favorable view of Trump. And I think the enthusiasm game is where the Democrats are going to going to benefit.
But to be clear, the enthusiasm is 90% negative. It's not we're thrilled with the Democrats. It's we're really ticked off at the Republicans.
Yeah. But if that gets them to the polls, but that's what we'll have to see. Yeah.
I did want to take a minute at the end to also talk about the successful case filed by State Attorney General against the Meta platform.
Yes.
Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram. $375 million verdict. And what they did was just the classic, you know, sting operation that we see on TV all the time, where they put something online pretending to be a person under the age of 14, immediately started getting sexual content, availability to sexual content, and that was followed by solicitation from adults. I mean, it just
clear
like,
cut.
Yeah, just like Congress has known has been going on for
years.
And so they set up that sting. As at the conclusion of that, there are several people now facing criminal charges, and there is a $375 million verdict against Meta. Let's be clear, that's chump change for those guys. That's, you know, one day's operations, maybe, if that. So that is in no way going to change their ways of operating. But there's a second phase to that trial coming up, where a judge could order them to actually start having safeguards, or you can't do this in New Mexico. This is happening at the same time that a jury in California found them liable on a completely different reason.
Yeah.
And that was that young children were addicted to it, and that it was intentionally addicting.
Like cigarettes used to be.
And to be clear, it's intentionally addictive to everybody.
Yes.
But the impact on young children is especially.
And their mental health is really terrible.
Yes.
No, I think this is very heartening, and I'm very proud of our state for moving ahead with that. And I think this, if anything, could open the door to other state attorneys general following suit and doing the exact thing. And it's sometimes when we use the word sting, we think, well, it was an unfair setup. This was just, I mean, all it was a posting as a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
And the rest came to them.
I agree with you on the word sting. I mean, I think the history of that is a little bit shady. But listen, if you are going online surfing for little kids, I don't care how they catch you.
Really, that's true. It's just really.
I mean, I know the lawyers would disagree with that, and I respect that. I'm just telling you from the gut, that's how I feel.
Yes, and I think in this case, it wasn't like the 14-year-old was enticing, posting anything that was enticing. That would be more in the old-fashioned way of entrapment,
So, you know, I don't know where that leads. One final thing on that. As I mentioned, Congress has known about this. There was a whistleblower named Frances Haugen who came forward 6 years ago, seven years ago.
I do remember that a little.
And so, and there is a section to the law, I want to say 230. Anyway, when the internet was first invented, because it was in its infancy and it was this new technology and they wanted to give it every opportunity to flourish, they carved out a piece from the libel law.
Yes.
And so for newspapers and radio and television, if you print something that slanders another person and you do it knowingly or recklessly, and that person has been damaged by your slander, they can sue you.
Yes.
None of that applies online.
Yep.
Online, the rule is that as long as you're not the person who wrote it, you're protected.
Which means that all of these purveyors, all these publishers of the information, are immune from lawsuit.
Yes, that's
exactly have been anyway.
Right. Until that goes away, and that is why the standards are so different online, where you have this cesspool. Because there are no standards.
And that's also with advertising. I remember when I studied journalism law, all right, it's been a couple of decades, but you know, in advertisers, you can't make false claims about your products. And that's all over the web.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just the wild, wild west.
Yeah.
And like I said, the notion was that, well, we need to protect this new technology in its infancy. All right, well, 40 years later, is that still what we're leaning on?
Yeah. Excellent point. That'd be good to see what's going to happen here.